What happened after, and what changed? There is not much left to tell. So much of the rest is aftermath, the life I lead now. At the cistern, our temporary shelter, I fed Wick as if he were a rare and fragile hummingbird. As the last of the venom worked its way through his system, I made him drink the water from the well. I dressed his wounds and cleaned them. I talked to him, even though he still could not hear me. I held his hand. I kept watch for any enemy, but no enemy came. As I worked, I told him I loved him, that he was a person, that he was a person, that I loved him, because I meant it, because I thought if he didn't hear it, he might die, and later I might not be able to say it. We were always finding each other and losing each other and finding each other again, and that was just the way of us. I don't know how else to say it. Perhaps only I could truly make Wick a person by forgiving him. And if I forgave him, if I showed I forgave him, then maybe we could be people together. Outside, it rained for 3 days and nights. That would have been strange by itself, an event. But this was no ordinary rain. All manner of creature dropped from the sky, or, at the touch of this rain, sprouted up from the ground. Grass grew fast and wild outside the cistern, created paths of green, and on some of the dead blackened trees down the slopes, I noticed new leaves. There were on certain avenues in the city, I would learn, new growths of vines and plants that had been gone for years. Birdsong came lyrical through the storms, and animals long hidden emerged from sanctuary. But most of it was biotech, uncanny. On the desolate plain, the water triggered the last of the traps, and up came vast clouds and explosions of life, even eruptions of bees, or things that looked like bees, out of the marsh, taken up by the wind and scattered. Elongated, elastic creatures dug themselves out from long slumber and, suspicious and almost in their stride apologetic, walked bandy-legged away to dig burrows. At the holding ponds, the waters swelled and overflowed, and all that lay there flooded the company building, spilled out across the plain, and even now we do not know how much of the new life among us comes from that moment. In the city itself, torrents of alcohol minnows came to slippery, wriggling life, joined by microorganisms in the rain to populate broken streets and infiltrate cracks and grottos. There came from across the city, to the astonishment of people used to poverty, such a sense in that moment of plenty. On the third day, the torrent ended, and the moisture evaporated or disappeared into the ground, and much of the greenery receded, and the new animals died, or hid, or were eaten. To an observer fresh to the city, it might have looked as broken and useless as before, but it was not. Some new things remained, took root, became permanent. Some flourished. The city had been washed as clean as it could be, and what had been taken away was as important as what had been added. On the fourth day, Wick's eyes opened, and they were clear and clean of pain, and he tottered to his feet, looked around the cistern with a weak smile on his face. I had kept Wick alive. I had failed at so much else, but I kept Wick alive. He gave me our last password in those first lucid moments, the word that told me he was real. We don't need them anymore, I told him. A confusion spread across his face until he understood. A lesser person than Wick would have surrounded himself with a fake past, with a personal history, constructed some pretense, handed out lies, or leaned on whatever fake memories the company had given him. But Wick had not done that. Wick had kept himself apart, had preferred to be alone, to be lonely, rather than to be held captive.
"You saved my life," Wick said, and kissed me.
And I let him. That night, we returned home to the balcony cliffs to sift through the wreckage and to begin again. The strange, forgotten animals abandoned by the company live among us, along with their insatiable curiosity. Like borns that want nothing from the old world, they need nothing from it. They are their own captains and lead their own lives, although there are still human beings who see them as food, as expendable. In their fearlessness, I find a kind of solace. In how they pursue their own plans, their own destiny, I find relief. They will outstrip all of us in time, and the story of the city will soon be their story, not ours. The moored proxies were still a terror for a time, but they had their own terror to face, that their master was dead. Many died within 3 or 4 years, and those left were both more dangerous and more civilized. They had their own intricate, chirping, huffing language, and have begun to develop their own customs. The cubs are far removed already from unthinking violence and act more like bears, wary and clever, and more cautious, as if they understand better their place. The feral children, the ones the magician created, dissolved into the city. Some were too damaged, and these formed their own outlaw communities, entrenched deep below the factories, and at night the remnants come out to terrorize, to remind us they still exist. But they too are much reduced, and they can never again hold territory, as they did under the magician. Others found their own way out. Some could return to families and be forgiven and taken in, despite their physical deformity, despite their psychosis. Others had no such recourse but gave up their old ways and lived in the shadows under bridges and in abandoned buildings. They would never be entirely whole again, and there was nothing anyone could do to remedy that. But I can stroll down an avenue lined with young trees now, visit a market where people under shelter of makeshift tents barter for goods. I can do that, even if there are still parts of the city I could never visit because too much violence lurks there. At times, in the observatory district, we see regular lights, and some are electric, a part of the old world brought back to us. Wells dug or cleaned out, filtered, and communities growing up around them. The planting of vegetables, the rumors of an orchard or two. There are fewer dead astronauts at the intersections to confuse us. There is only us now, and the monsters, who are both part of history and always with us. In this new old city, I want no great power, no power at all, only power over my own life. All I wanted is for there to be no great power in the city at all, no company, no morgue, no magician. And in the end, although I loved him, no born. For a time, I saw the little fox outside the balcony cliffs. For a time, the fox followed me, the bright eyes, the alert ears, the quick gait. "Did you pick me?" I would ask her. "Did you mean for me to find Bourne? Or was it an accident, a mistake, chance? And did you know what might happen when I found him?" I never expected an answer. And eventually, the fox did not return. Wick tells me we live in an alternate reality. But I tell him the company is the alternate reality, was always the alternate reality. The real reality is something we create every moment of every day, that realities spin off from our decisions in every second we're alive. I tell him the company is the past preying on the future, that we are the future. A glittering reef of stars spread out phosphorescent, and each one might have life on it, planets revolving around them. There might even be people like us, looking up at the night sky. Was there a world beyond? Is that what the shining wall of silver raindrops meant, a gateway? Or is that a delusion? It doesn't matter, because now we can make one here, a world.